recorded down at Canine Studios for the show a few weeks ago. That is Tan and Felix in session, and two more session tracks to come from them before the midnight hour.
Icon, home to new Irish music on Phantom 105.2.
But over the next bit of the show, we're entering the world of the songwriter and looking at the art of songwriting through the eyes of some of the best young songwriters in Ireland right now. And you know, for most of us, songs are the source of some of the most powerful experiences in our lives. Across the world, songs are rooted in all social gatherings. From the church, to the football terrace, to the festival field, as a society, we worship through song. But suppose we break it down to a more personal level, a song can hold all the mystery and magic of childhood.
Hold your breath. Make a wish. Count to three.
Come with me and you'll be in a world of pure imagination.
A song could be the sound of every heart that's ever been broken.
I've been loving you too long to stop now.
While on the flip side, some songs just make us happy and remind us of the good times.
How sweet it is to be loved by you. Yes, baby.
A song can come on the radio and catch us unawares and transport us right back to a time and place in our lives. Remember where you were the first time you heard the opening riff to this one? So you know, the power and impact songs have on our lives is undeniable. What inspires someone to write a song, and how does the process work? Well, over the past few weeks, I've been chatting with some of the best young songwriters working in Ireland today to find out why, and indeed how they do what they do.
Yeah, it's something I have to do. I don't know why. I've never questioned if a song's there, I need to get it written down or recorded on phone or whatever, and it changes my mood. It changes my mood. It's very strange. I don't know what it is, but yeah, I write songs, and I think that's what I do.
It's kind of a little bit amazing to create something and then play it at a festival, have it all, people singing it back.
If we got a grip of what that magic was and tried to understand it better, then the magic would be sucked out of the music.
All I want.
Icon, home to new Irish music on Phantom 105.2.
Connell from Weaker Corners remembering the impact his dad's Beatles record collection had on him as a kid. Further up the road in Cavan, a very young Lisa O'Neill was hooked after discovering a cassette tape in her parents' kitchen. The timeless songs on it and the band's flamboyant frontman made a lasting impression on Lisa.
An early impression, well, like I can remember something being very strong, was Queen. There was an album of Queen in the house. So my earliest memory of going to it, again, was getting up early in the morning to play this tape in the kitchen, this tape of Queen songs. I sit on the worktop beside the radio and listen over and over again and then sing along to Bohemian Rhapsody and Fat Bottom Girls, and it just excited me. And I wanted to explode, I wanted to sing, you know.
From dancing around the kitchen to Fat Bottom Girls, Lisa didn't waste much time and remembers the first song she wrote after getting a present from her parents.
I do remember writing something when I was about 8 or 9. They got me a keyboard, and it was a love song. And I had never been in love, so I don't know where I was getting these lyrics from, but it was something about travelling across the ocean to see you, who I don't know that is. And I wrote it on some paper and I hung it up over the keyboard. And I remember hiding it then. If someone had walked into the room and I hid it, I felt I was going to be slagged over this. So I was embarrassed about it. So it was a little... Yeah, I mean, like a 9-year-old doesn't write songs, and who do you think you are, you know? I was embarrassed about that, but I wanted to. And I was hiding it. I was embarrassed about it, yeah.
Wednesday night here on Phantom 105.2. You are listening in to Icon Cahal in with you until the midnight hour. And tonight we are looking at the art of songwriting. And, you know, the one thing that I have noticed while talking to songwriters over the past while is that from an early age they identify music as the thing they want to follow. However, trying to find a style that suits is often one of the hardest stages to master. Let's hear again from We Could Corners.
For us particularly, it took us an awfully long time to find out, you know, what we were good at. And for that reason, we didn't release an album until having played together for 10 years. So we did this sort of thing, like we decided it would be a good idea to be a covers band for a while. So we played loads and loads of gigs. And that was in the hope of, you know, becoming better songwriters by learning songs by Van Morrison and by Simon and Garfunkel, and we presumed that that was the route to sort of excellence in writing by, you know, practicing the craft of, you know, the best writers. And then eventually we just sort of at one stage discovered a style of our own, you know, or gradually it evolved, and until the point where we felt we should make a record. And we did.
Because we were kind of writing, like we kind of used to write during the year and record in our summers. So we have like loads and loads of songs, but they just didn't, we were never that proud. And we used to gig and we used to play like open mic nights and stuff. But I remember we used to both feel after the gigs just embarrassed almost about the, you know, just kind of going, it's, they're not us or something. So it took kind of just that long to stumble on a style that we felt represented us.
The night breaks into little parts and I'm reduced to stealing hearts. It's a pirate's life for me.
There's a couple. I remember when John played me a song called A Pirate's Life, I remember thinking, that's different, and that is not like anything I've heard before, and that's something that I think we could do something with, like, or the song was there, but it was something that I thought it was stepping it up a level. There's another song called Go Easy, which we used to just, as John was saying, play on two acoustic guitars, and when we introduced an electric guitar and the drums, it kind of just opened up another avenue. Like, you know, there's loads of ways to write a song, but it was just another way, and that was one of the first songs that came about in that form.
I woke you up with a communist kiss. Woke you up with a communist kiss. Hurry old bedroom poly.
Limerick band Windings there with a track called Cleaner. That is taken from their Choice nominated album, I Am Not the Crow. You are listening into Icon here on Phantom 105.2. And, you know, listening to Innie Kay, Connor from Villagers and Steve from Windings there, I think we can understand that a large part of songwriting is capturing and storing ideas.
The notebook is sort of if you go into the notebooks, it's just careening, you know, there's a lot of bad words, bad lyrics, bad ideas, purple prose, florid writing, and a lot of embarrassing, all the things that got thrown out are in the notebooks, you know. Sometimes there's something good, you know.
And for anyone who's seen the brilliant Darkness on the Edge of Town documentary that chronicles the making of Bruce Springsteen's fourth studio album, you'll have noticed the prominent part the notebook plays in Springsteen's songwriting process, with ideas spilling out onto the page. For years, songwriters have used the trusty notebook to gather ideas and to store scraps of songs. However, as a certain Minnesotan once sang, the times, they are a-changin'.
It's very clear to us that the world's going mobile. And we really believe that a device like this, which is you know, an order of magnitude more powerful than any mobile device or any cell phone that's ever been created, and yet vastly easier to use, is the future. And so that's why we spent the last 2.5 years inventing iPhone.
My notepad is my iPhone, and in fact, I recorded and wrote this entire record on my phone, which I love technology for that. It's much easier than having scraps of paper everywhere.
Hey baby, if this is not a challenge, just means that I love you as much as I always said I did.
I don't do the notepad thing, but I have the phone at all times, and I'll do the old voice recorder thing. I sing the most kind of stupid little melody lines into it, and you kind of listen back to them and laugh your head off, you know. So you're in the middle of town and you're trying not to be heard, and you look like a loon, you know. But little things you've seen, or if you think of a word or whatever, just kind of take out the phone and talk it in.
You can end up building up lots and lots and lots of like sound clips and not going back and following through with a lot of the original ideas, because you just move on to the next one and you've got another bit and another bit. But at the same time, they are really useful just to be able to capture whatever you're doing at that particular time, you know.
I've got some really weird recordings of my voice, like saying things while walking down the street. And when you listen back to them, you just go, God, if anybody was behind me, you know, saying this sort of oblique line that I obviously felt was weird enough to merit committing to tape.
REM's Michael Stipe, Galway musician Mossy Nolan, and just there We Cut Corners, talking about how advances in technology, and in particular the arrival of the smartphone, has very much changed how ideas for songs are captured by songwriters. After winning almost universal praise for his debut album, Becoming a Jekyll, Conor O'Brien from Villagers had other things on his mind when he sat down to start writing songs for that always difficult second album.
Let's sing for a bit, just to see.
Yeah.
I think it was harder this time because I sort of had critics in my head and stuff. Like, even before I'd written the song, I was sort of imagining how many stars it was going to get.
Right, okay.
And I was like, that's ridiculous. So I had to spend a few months kind of leaving that alone and getting rid of that. And then I started to find my own kind of inner critic who's far harsher than any other critic. And once you find that, you're steady, you're on a line, and you're kind of completely immune to any outside kind of criticism, because you know what's good or bad yourself. And that's when I feel like I'm finally writing an album, you know. When you're kind of just you believe in it so much that you're willing to beat yourself up over it.
Terry Bliss, I waited for something and something died, so I waited for nothing.
Kieran and Roe from De Laurentiis there, talking about the ups and downs of songwriting in a band environment. And I guess it must be quite tricky when all four members of the one band all write songs, but I think it certainly paid off big time on their album Little Sparks, which of course won the Choice earlier on this year. You are listening to Icon here on Phantom 105.2. Cahal in with you until the midnight hour. Still to come on the show, we will be going to the Listening Post, our new arts feature profiling tonight, This Other Kingdom. Plus, we'll be heading back down to K9 Studios for a couple of more session tracks from Tandem Felix.
Phantom 105.2, Dublin's indie rock.
But let's catch up with Dubliner Sirica Richardson. Sirica left Ireland a couple of years ago after finishing school, and when she was home a few weeks ago, she dropped into Phantom Studios, and I asked her what effect, if any, did moving to one of the biggest cities in the world have on her songwriting.
Start spreading the news, I'm leaving today.
It changed my ambition as a songwriter, I think, and also
my kind of comfort level with it, because when I went to New York, I was anonymous. Nobody, I knew maybe three people in the city of like millions and millions of people. So I could go to these open mics and go and sing a song in front of total strangers, and then there was kind of no pressure. It wasn't like I had all my friends who were coming along, and if I messed it up, I would be hearing about it for weeks. So I kind of, there was no pressure for me to make a mess of it. So kind of that freedom of not knowing anyone was really, really good. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure I would have, because it's something that I really have wanted to do for so long. But if I think I would have found it a lot harder if I had stayed in Dublin to get that confidence to go out and start off doing it in front of people who I know. That's quite... Now I really enjoy it. It's really nice because I've reached a level of confidence where I enjoy performing. But it's now it's nice to perform in front of my friends and stuff. But in the beginning, I found it much easier to you know, share my music with people who I didn't know. You put yourself in a very vulnerable position as well, because people are going to judge you and decide whether or not it's good or bad, and kind of maybe start analysing based on what you're singing about. So it is quite a vulnerable position to be in, I think.
Whoa, you had on a t-shirt saying I heard NYC, New York City, just how much do you love me? You had on a t-shirt, how much do you love me?
The amazing Sarika Richardson and her track I Heart NYC, which she recorded here in Phantom Studios a while ago.
Icon with Cathal Funge.
In a few minutes' time, we're going to be asking some of the songwriters who contributed to the show what their favourite part of songwriting is. But first, here's Ciarán and Ro from De Laurentiis again, talking about the journey a song can go on.
I don't think any of us are going to tell anyone we're experts. But, like, you know, it's kind of a little bit amazing to create something and then play it at a festival and have it all, people singing it back, or see how things work. Like, there's a song called The Stream on the album, and it started off with Ross kind of whispering to us with a little ukulele, you know, and now it's this kind of very powerful kind of song that we, you know, we're playing at South by Southwest, and people are kind of thrashing their heads to, like, you know, with the way the drums kicking, it's just mad, you know.
Heathers, Remember When on Phantom 105.2. Don't forget, we will be heading back down to K9 Studios shortly for tonight's session. It is Tandem Felix in session. But we're going to finish off this part of the show right now. Hopefully you've gained a good insight into the world of the songwriter, and indeed for any aspiring songwriter listening in, maybe you've picked up a couple of tips along the way. But to wrap up, let's ask some of the songwriters who've contributed over the last while what their favourite part of songwriting is.
But we're only songwriters, just writing our songs, and that's all.
I think it's the discovery of the idea in that time when you're on your own before you played it to anyone.
We write what we live, and we live what we write. Is that wrong?
Favorite part of songwriting?
The moment where a new song clicks and I get it to work, and the first like four or five times that I'll play through it when I've just sort of cracked the code.
My favourite part is when suddenly a song it changes from just bits to this is a song, and it can happen like that in a moment.
When they're done.
I think coming when you something clicks,
yeah,
and there's no better feeling.
When it passes the self-critic test. You've worked out a line, and then you sing it back to yourself a whole bunch of times, and then come back and revisit it, and on the revisit you still really like it. That's the happiest part for me. You know, the theory when don't make a cup of tea until something good happens. But when it does, when you do crack it, something good happens. You've got somewhere, you know. Yeah, trying to put the kettle on, yeah.